2013, we're in the Public Service Commission of the State Capitol in Bismarck, North Dakota, for the administrative hearing in the matter of four public utilities cases involving Otter Tail Power Company and Montana Dakota Utilities Company. Case numbers PU 1379, PU 1383, PU 1384, and PU 1385. My name is Alan Holberg. I'm the designated hearing officer today with the Office of Administrative Hearings. I'll take appearances at this time from counsel for the companies, then from advocacy staff, and then commission advisory staff. Mr. Gerhardsen, please.
Good morning. I'm Bruce Gerhardsen, Associate General Counsel for Otter Tail Power Company. We have a number of witnesses that, if it's okay with the hearing examiner, I'll introduce those as we introduce them in their testimony.
That's fine. Who's with you at the table?
At the table is Mr. Brouse, Tom Brouse. He is one of our witnesses, and Mr. Peter Bifon, also one of our witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Gerhardsen. Mr. Kuntz, please.
Daniel Kuntz, Associate General Counsel for Montana Dakota Utilities Co. With me are our witnesses today, Tammy Aberly and Andrea Stomberg.
Thank you. Mr. Norrell, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ryan Norrell on behalf of North Dakota Public Service Commission Advocacy Staff, and with me is Mr. Mike Diller on behalf of Advocacy Staff as well.
Thank you. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, please.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, counsel with the commission and counsel for advisory staff, and with me is Patrick Fawn and Jerry Lean.
Thank you. And Mr. Norrell, there are no interveners and no protestants of record for this matter. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Thank you. To my left, of course, are members of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, Commissioner Randy Christman, Commission Chairman Brian Kalk, and Commissioner Julie Fedorchek. I'm going to give a brief summary of this matter, and then I'll later call on the commissioners for their opening comments, starting with Commissioner Kalk, who has the electric generation portfolio. I think that's what it's called. But first, before we get to the brief summary, is there anyone present that's not associated with the two companies involved, public members, in other words, that wishes to present information to the commission today? Could I see a show of hands if there's anyone who would be considered a public member not associated with the two companies who wishes to present information today? Or even if you don't wish to present information, anyone that would be considered a public participant? No one. All right, then I'll probably ask again later if there's anyone in that category, but for now it looks like we'll have no public participation, just participation from the two companies and the PSC staff. Just some brief background and then a recitation of the issues for the record for this matter. On February 8th of 2013, Otter Tail Power Company filed a tariff that provides for an adjustment of rates to recover jurisdictional capital costs and associated operating expenses incurred to comply with federal environmental mandates on existing electricity generating stations. That's case number PU 1379. Also on February 8th, 2013, Otter Tail filed a rate adjustment under the tariff to recover the cost of environmental upgrades to the Big Stone Electric Generation Plant to comply with the South Dakota Hays State Implementation Plan and the United States Environmental Protection Agency. That's case number PU 1384. On February 11, 2013, Montana Dakota Utilities Company filed a tariff that provides for an adjustment of rates to recover jurisdictional capital costs and associated operating expenses incurred to comply with federal environmental mandates on existing electricity generating stations, and that's case number PU 1385. And also on that same day, MDU also filed a rate adjustment under the tariff to recover the cost of environmental upgrades to the Big Stone Electric Generation Plant to comply with the South Dakota Hays State Implementation Plan and the United States Environmental Protection Agency, case number PU 1883. And of course, the commission consolidated these four cases under North Dakota Administrative Code section 6902.0204. And on July 10 of this year, the commission issued a notice of consolidated hearing scheduling this public hearing. Two pre-hearing conferences were held on this matter prior to the hearing to so that we could have an efficient and smooth conduct of the hearing. The issues for the hearing today are as follows. The issues for the each environmental cost recovery tariff proceeding are: should the commission approve each environmental cost recovery tariff? Does each tariff allow the respective public utility to recover on a timely basis its investment in capital costs and associated operating expenses incurred to meet federal environmental mandates not reflected in the utility's general rate schedule? Does each tariff allow a return on the respective public utilities investment made to meet federal environmental mandates at the level approved in the utility's most recent general rate case? Does each tariff provide a current return on construction work in progress to meet federal environmental mandates provided the cost recovery from retail customers of the allowance for funds and used during construction is not sought through any other means? And finally, does each tariff terminate cost recovery after the respective public utilities costs and expenses to meet federal environmental mandates have been recovered fully or have been reflected in the utility's general rate tariffs? Then the issues to be considered in each environmental cost recovery rate adjustment are: should the commission approve each environmental cost recovery rate adjustment? Does each rate adjustment comply with the respective tariff? And finally, are each utility's incurred costs and expenses to meet federal environmental mandates reasonable and prudent? Okay, I'll call at this time for the commissioner's comments, starting with Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. And just a just administrative note to start with, Commissioner Fedorchak and I consulted. ADPs are actually under my portfolio, but this one, since it's a tariff, we believe will be under Commissioner Fedorchak's. So that's just a slight, it gets confusing sometimes back and forth. But while we're on the ADP, I just want to go back a little bit to, I think, what got us here today is that in May of 2012, as you're all aware, the commission granted advanced determination of prudence on this project, if you will, in order to meet the EPA Regional Haze Rule of 1999. Everyone's very familiar with that. But I went back and looked through the ADP order. And in the ADP order, the big thing that the commission decided at that time, and it was myself, Commissioner Clark, and Commissioner Kramer at that time. And the things that really jumped out at me from that is that, you know, Otter Tail initially recommended the SNCR. South Dakota selected a different option, which I think really set the stage for the ADP line 36 that talked about a difference in price of anywhere between $70 million and $97 million, depending how exactly you figure it. But to me, that's really the single issue that's at play here today, is that did you guys make the right choice, given the fact that North Dakota didn't necessarily require the stricter standard, but South Dakota did? And I've certainly read through all the testimony, and I appreciate everyone working the testimony, everyone pre-filing it, so I had a chance to read it over and over again, because this is a very technical issue. But for me personally, no matter which way I would go on this, I want to make sure we've got a good, solid record that supports the decision that's made. Not that we always will do that, but in this case particularly, because in my mind, the implications of this commission picking a higher rate for what's required by another state could set the stage for a solar mandate, a wind mandate, being driven to North Dakota consumers, even though our residents are strongly against it. So this case, I think there's a lot of good justification that the company's provided. I think there's justification on the other side that the commission has provided previously. So for me personally, I just appreciate everyone being here today. If that one issue wasn't such a big issue, I think perhaps we could have solved this in an informal. But I wanted to make sure that my new colleagues, if you will, on the commission had chance to answer questions since they were not around for the ADP, but also even for me to make sure that there's a really strong record that says why this commission did what we did in this case that doesn't box us in future proceedings, because we want to make sure we can look at everyone the same. So I guess that really is it for me, and thank you all for coming today, and I look forward to a good hearing.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. Commissioner Fedorchuk, please.
Good morning, everybody. I appreciate Commissioner Kalk driving this to a formal hearing, not because it created a whole bunch more work for everybody, but it gives me an additional opportunity to learn more about this subject. It's really, this case has been a great learning opportunity for me, learning about the different environmental control technologies that exist, how they apply in one case and not another, learning more about the environmental regulations, some of the challenges with coal-fired power. And so it's been a great learning experience. It's really helped kind of bring me up to speed on some of the key issues facing both the electric industry and the coal industry all at the same time. So thank you for all your diligent work in putting together your materials. This plant is an important part of our power fleet, both for North Dakota and for the region. So I think it's very important that we make the smart investments to keep this fleet and maintain this fleet in the best possible way. Environmental upgrades are just a reality. They're a valid part of maintaining the function of a fleet and important investments. And so, you know, we're looking today at maybe the differences between a few, few different technologies and the advantages or disadvantages of them. But in general, this is an important investment in this fleet, and I look forward to learning more about the specifics today and hearing your concerns. But I'm pleased to be here and pleased to be part of supporting this project.
Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchuk. Commissioner Christman, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. I guess for me, there's three givens here. First of all, it's amazing what a long process some of these utility issues get to be. Secondly, as Commissioner Kalk pointed out, this is a very important precedent and just could have some really far-reaching impacts. And so it is important that we come to a conclusion based on a good, solid record. And third, there may be some doubt about whether this falls under Commissioner Kalk or Commissioner Fedorchuk's portfolio, but it clearly doesn't fall under mine. And when you're the third one up for opening comments, there's usually not a lot left to be said. So let's get started.
Thank you, commissioners. Okay, here's the hearing procedure we're going to follow today. Otter Tail is going to present his case first, and they have four witnesses. And they're going to call on those witnesses. They've each filed pre-filed testimony, and they're going to give some background and then summarize their testimony, and then it's going to be opened up for questions. The order of questions will be, I don't imagine Mr. Kuntz will have any questions except for perhaps the two witnesses that are the same. And I might add at the beginning that even though Otter Tail is offering the testimony of Mr. Thoma and Mr. Rolfs, there will be testimony for both companies, and they'll be entered into the record for both companies. Then the order of questioning will be Mr. Norell and then Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, and then the commissioners, three commissioners, and then we'll open it up for questions by counsel again, and then such further questions of each witness as may be necessary. Then I'll call on Montana Dakota to present its case, and it has two additional witnesses. Again, two of its witnesses are being presented by Otter Tail. I should mention that there is a PowerPoint presentation in Otter Tail's presentation, and I guess, is that part of your case too then?
Yes, ma'am.
And then that exhibit also will be a joint exhibit for both companies. And Mr. Kuntz will call his witnesses, both of which have filed pre-filed testimony, and again, they will be summarizing their testimony, and then I'll open up for questions. I don't imagine Mr. Gerhardsen will have questions of those witnesses, but it'll be
Mr. Norell, and then Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, and then the commissioners, and then such additional questions as may be necessary for the witnesses. Then I'll call on commission advocacy staff. Mr. Norell is calling Mr. Diller, who has also pre-filed his testimony. And as I understand it, it'll be the same procedure there. Mr. Diller will be summarizing his testimony, and then we'll open it up for questions of Mr. Diller, starting with Mr. Gerhardsen, and Mr. Kuntz, then Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, and then the commissioners, and then such further questions as may be necessary. Again, I believe there's no public witnesses. Did anyone come in, a member of the public? I don't see anyone, so we'll not be having any public participation. At the conclusion of Mr. Diller's testimony, I guess I'll ask if there's anything further the companies wish to present and rebuttal. I really don't expect that, but there may be something that comes up in regard to the questioning. So I'll ask that. I believe there's an attendance sheet that's being passed around. If you're not at one of the tables, please sign that attendance sheet. The commission won't be reaching a decision today on these matters. They're being recorded, and they'll be reviewed later by the commission, and the commission will thereafter be issuing findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a final order as to the administrative relief requested by the companies. If the companies don't agree with the final order of the commission in regard to these four matters, they may have appeal rights or other rights under the Administrative Agencies Practice Act, Chapter 2832 of the North Dakota Century Code, and under the Commission's rules, North Dakota Administrative Code, Article 6902. The burden of proof today is on the two companies to show by the preponderance of the evidence that they're entitled to the rate adjustments in the tariffs they're asking. Any questions about the procedures? Mr. Gerhardsen?
No questions.
Mr. Kuntz?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Norell?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco? Commissioners, any questions before we start? Commissioners?
No.
Did you wish to make an opening, Mr. Gerhardsen?
Mr. Hearing Examiner and Commissioners, no opening statement, just a thank you. Certainly appreciate that in the opening statements of the commissioners, they have a good awareness of what the issues are, I think. We hope that the record is complete, satisfactory, very important issues to our company, very important that we have the support and confidence of the commission. So it's a good opportunity for us to, I think, do that. I will mention that the PowerPoint that Mr. Rolfes is going to give is also, we thought it a good opportunity to just give you an update on the progress of the construction. So there's some just additional helpful background we hope that we can present. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Please call your first witness.
I'll call Mr. Rolfes.
Please be seated. And I'll give this admonition once for the benefit of all of the witnesses testifying here today, and that is in administrative hearings, we're required by law to tell all witnesses that the maximum penalty for perjury in the state is a Class C felony, punishable by maximum 5 years imprisonment, $5,000 fine, or both. And, of course, perjury is essentially not telling the truth in a hearing such as this. Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Gerhardsen, please.
Mr. Rolfes, can you state your name for the record and maybe spell your last name, please?
My name is Mark Rolfes. The last name is R-O-L-F-E-S.
And do you work for Otter Tail Power Company?
Yes, I do.
What's your job title and what do you do?
My title is Manager Generation Development, and I am the project manager for the Big Stone Air Quality Control System project.
Mr. Rolfes, I've left at the podium two items marked for identification as OTP 4 and OTP 5. Can you tell me what those two items are?
Exhibit OTP-4 is the PowerPoint presentation that I am intending to give, and OTP-5 is my pre-filed testimony.
Let's focus on OTP-5, your pre-filed testimony. Do you have any corrections to that pre-filed direct testimony?
No, I do not.
If I were to ask you each of the questions that are contained in that pre-filed direct testimony, would your answers be the same today?
Yes, they would.
I'll offer OTP, exhibit OTP 5.
There's no objection. I'll admit OTP 5.
And before we get to OTP 4, I'd like you to briefly summarize the topics you cover in your pre-filed direct testimony.
My pre-filed testimony is intended to inform the Commission of the progress of the project, to update the Commission from the ADP hearing to where we are today, how construction is going, and to give some information on how the project is being managed to ensure that the funds are being expended prudently for our customers.
Did I offer OTP 5?
You did.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to distribute, if you don't mind, copies of the PowerPoint presentation, the OTP 4.
Please.
Commissioners, these are just copies.
Thank you.
We'll also project this. Now, I mentioned that this is an update, and before I offer it, why don't we go through the PowerPoint, if that's acceptable, and you can just go ahead and go at your own speed there, Mr. Rolfes.
Okay. Before we start, I will apologize if I use acronyms. I have never been associated with a project that had so many acronyms. AQCS is Air Quality Control System, and the PowerPoint will summarize what's in my testimony. Start with the financial aspect of the project. At the time that we were before the Commission for the Advanced Determination of Prudence, the budget for the project, including mercury control, was $491 million. The budget, projected budget today, is $405 million. We have reduced the projected cost for the project by $86 million. That's about 17.5%. The reductions have come from many sources, but primarily four, the largest being engineering changes that we have been able to make to improve the cost of the project by making changes that don't affect the performance but reduce the cost. The next factor is market timing. When we were here before the commission on the for the ADP, we related that it was a buyer's market and it was important for us to reach the market in a timely manner, and that's proving to be the case as we have gotten very competitive proposals and bids for the equipment and the services that we have procured. The third item for this reduction is the construction management. Because of the project execution model we selected, which is just how do we construct the project, how do we contract for it, we selected a single general work contractor and a target price concept. This allowed us to do the construction management ourselves. I mean, Otter Tail, with the help of hired consultants, is managing the project rather than having a third party, and that is resulting in substantial savings. And the fourth one, with the reduction in cost, we were able to reduce the contingency associated with the project.
Is everyone hearing that? Okay. This sounds good. Okay, good.
The next slide is just the cash flow graph for the project. I apologize for all the different bar colors, but the green bars show the actual cost per month, and the tallest bar is the month just passed, and it's really the highest expenditure for the project, highest month expenditure for the project, and that is due to the construction activity, but also we're at the peak of procurements, the material arriving. The actual expenditures will start declining, and then it'll have a second peak at the time that we go into the outage to tie the equipment in. Talk about where we are in construction. First, we began by installing what's referred to as auger cast pilings. These are the foundations, well, what actually supports the foundations. These are 18-inch diameter holes that are drilled 90 feet in depth and then filled with concrete and reinforcing rods, and then the foundations sit on that. All 305 of those foundations have been completed. We've also installed almost 4 miles of underground piping that's necessary for the project. We've then started on the foundation work, and the bag house and scrubber foundations have been completed, and I've got some pictures that we'll talk about some of the specifics of that. Steel erection on the scrubber and bag house has started, and the SCR steel will start within a month, and the SCR foundations are nearly complete. Today we have about 225 craft workers on the site. That number will increase as we head towards the peak labor force next summer. And we are getting about 5 to 10 semi-loads of material a day. Picture is often easier and gives more information than what I can say. We'll start at the top left corner. This is a picture of the site the day of mobilization of the contractor. In the foreground, you can see a parking lot has been prepared. In the background, we have about 25 acres of prepared laydown area for material. The picture just to the right of that is that it's the same area late last month with a number of construction trailers in the foreground, a lot full of cars, and the entire 25 acres is crammed full of material for the project. On the bottom left, you see some of our challenges. Right after mobilization, as we began trying to do earthwork, we encountered our spring, our last April, which was quite tough. We've been rethinking winter plans and such, but we hit a lot of snow right after we got started. But the picture on the left is that area today with all the pre-assembly of components. You see the scrubber vessels on the right and baghouse components on the left. And in the background, there's a material storage warehouse that's been erected. You can see there's 6 cranes in the air just in this one picture. The first foundation work was for the waste ash and pebble lime storage. Again, starting in the upper left corner, the white buckets are covering the top of the rebar from the auger cast piling, and the foundation sits on top of that. The picture to the right is that area after it's been excavated and the first layer of rebar is going in. The bottom left picture shows the concrete pour for that foundation. These pours are massive. This one is about 5.5 feet thick. To put in perspective, we emptied a cement truck every 3 minutes for 8 hours for this form. And next to it shows a picture in June as the steel starts going up for those silos. We continue, again, the upper left shows the silos going up inside the structural steel. And then last month, the additional silo rings or sections were added. The silo on the right that's painted is the pebble lime storage, and that has been completed, and the ash silo. The picture shows the setting of 2 more rings. It's about half its height in that picture. On the bottom left, you have a picture of the auger cast pile installation. This particular picture shows the actual auger off to the side as it's being repaired, but it's truly a 90-foot auger that goes straight into the ground, and then you pump concrete down the center of it as it's removed. And the picture on the bottom shows that area just before the pouring of the concrete as on top of the rebar mat. The next big excavation work is for the bag house and scrubber foundation. The top picture shows the excavation. And then the next one shows the first concrete pour. This pour was so large that it took 6 actual pours to do this in. There's 6,000 yards of concrete and 800 tons of rebar. And, of course, this was poured during – some of these pours were during the hottest weather. And to control the temperature of the concrete, each truck had to have 800 pounds of ice put in it to keep the concrete cool because of the hot weather. And on the bottom, you can see the steel that is going up right now on that foundation. This is the scrubber side. The bag house is behind it. And the final picture shows some of the equipment, in this case a waste ash bin being set into place as the steel is going up. I mentioned the almost 4 miles of pipe. The picture on the top, you know, shows a typical installation. The longest run was the raw water supply that the scrubber will use. The picture next to it is just an indication of all the work that has to be done in the existing boiler building for the ductwork that will come outside. We have over 600 pieces of structural steel that had to be added. This just shows one of them that is being worked on between the two force draft fan inlets. On the bottom is the start of the foundation work, the excavation, and then the forms for the induced draft fans. We need to replace the induced draft fans for the plant as part of the project. The induced draft fan basically pulls the air out of the boiler and pushes it up the stack. These will be two 14,000 horsepower fans. So they are truly monsters. That kind of gives you an idea of all the fronts that we're working on right now. It's quite a diverse project and going very well. We really need, on a project like this, to always touch on safety. We are putting a stronger emphasis on safety than any other project that I've been associated with. And we've got a long way to go, but so far the efforts are paying off. We have over 350,000 man-hours to date without a recordable or a lost-time injury or accident. So all of our OSHA numbers are zero. So far, the efforts are paying off. Touch briefly on risk. For a project this size, risk is extremely complicated issue, and it's really what can make or break the project. Just touch on how we are approaching the risk associated with this project. First, we put together a risk matrix that tries to identify all of the areas of concern, rank them, and then determine mitigation or management activities. That list is reviewed by management monthly to make sure that something isn't going south that we're not aware of. And some of the tools that we've employed to date to control risk are listed here, and I'll just go through them quickly. We have obtained builder's risk insurance for the construction activity. That was a process that was bid, and we selected the same carrier that has the plant policy, so there'll be no overlap in deductibles. Escalation, we have been able to contract that risk to the vendors. Same thing with labor productivity. We've contracted that to the responsibility of the contractors bidding on the project. We've established a target pricing approach. This aligns the interest between the owners and the contractors, and it also caps the owner's risk. We have retention on almost all of our contracts. In many of the contracts, we're holding 10% of the contract value until long after the work is complete. A minor one, but currency exchange. We have very few items coming from overseas, but the few that are coming, that currency risk is the supplier's responsibility. The last bullet, the project was bid to both union and non-union contractors. It was won by a union contractor, and we and the unions and the contractor have been meeting quite often to do the best we can to ensure that there will be labor and that we understand the labor market. Just a little bit more on risk. The items that we're concerned about today, I mean, these are short-term items, but they're the ones that are on our radar right now, is the labor availability for the actual commissioning activity. We are almost a year away from commissioning, but we're putting together the staff to do that work. It will be a blend between existing plant employees, our construction effort, and contractors, and we're working to get that put together. Weather is the immediate concern. We've been very fortunate. This summer we've had extremely good weather for the work we're doing. Winter will determine if our luck continues. And the last one is just a labor availability. There's a lot of other construction, as you well know, especially in the western part of the state, and there's always some competition for labor. And just quickly, here is a graph of the manpower projections for the craft work for our contractor. On top of this, there is management, and at the end of the project, there will be approximately 250 more craft people for the last 4 months from the boiler contractor as we do the boiler work for the tie-in. This is just the general work contractor that's erecting the AQCS proper. And that completes my very quick update of a lot of activity at the plant.
Thank you, Mr. Rolfes. Any further questions, Mr. Gerritsen?
No further questions, but I will offer Exhibit OTP-4.
The PowerPoint.
The PowerPoint.
If there's no objection, I'll admit OTP-4. Mr. Kuntz, any additional questions of Mr. Rolfes? All right, thank you. Mr. Norrell, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Rolfes. Good morning. On page 3 of your testimony, you discussed the installation under South Dakota SIP allowed for either a semi-dry or a dry technology for the sulfur dioxide removal. You selected the dry technology. Why was that?
There was a number of reasons. The semi-dry is what's sometimes referred to as a spray dryer. It's what, you know, Antelope Valley and Coyote have. It's a more common technology. The true dry that we selected, in the bidding process, it came up the least cost. But another advantage, the dry technology has the ability to take the SO2 emissions lower than the semi-dry, so it has an advantage there. It takes less labor to operate, so the labor needs are less, and that also means that the fixed costs for the unit are less. So if for some reason the unit, because of nice weather, is not running as much, you know, the O&M costs are directly proportionate to its load. A semi-dry has more fixed cost that you're paying for all the time, regardless of what the loads were. So we stacked it up. There were a number of advantages, the biggest one, of course, being cost.
Okay. Speaking of cost, the projection of this project was originally $491 million. The current budget is looking at $405 million. What would you say to an Otter Tail or MDU subscriber out there who is concerned that that maybe their rates are too high because other projects have been way overbilled?
I can only give answers, you know, on the project that I know, but I mean, in general, we do not overbuild projects. I mean, we are very careful to deliver what we need in a utility type unit. I mean, there has to be availability and reliability as part of that. But I, from my experience, we have not been overbuilding, and this project, I believe, shows that and how we are finding ways to reduce costs.
Oh, I noticed one of the ways to reduce the cost was Otter Tail itself is going to be managing the construction of this. And your testimony on page 11, line 2021, you state that Otter Tail is capable to successfully manage this project. Has Otter Tail managed any other projects of this magnitude?
No, it has not.
What's the basis for your statement that Otter Tail is capable to manage this one?
It is a combination of things that come to play in this case. One is the delivery method that we have selected, where we have a single general work contractor. As an example, in the Big Stone 2 project, we were looking at multiple primes where we would have many contractors that needed to be coordinated. In this case, we have one contractor, so there is not as large of a burden in coordinating all the contractors. The other is we took a great effort to get the talent that we need to manage the project. So in areas where we did not have experience, such as a good example is quality assurance, we contracted for individuals that do have that experience, and we've put together, I think, one of the finest teams out there And it's about 50% Otter Tail employees and 50% contracted people that have construction background or quality assurance or scheduling background. So any place that we didn't have the expertise, we got it instead of cutting a corner.
Okay. On your PowerPoint, you had discussed the 90-foot pilings. Why so deep? That's an incredible depth.
If you know, the picture that the last one, you know, is a picture of the installation, and the SCR stands, well, it stands taller than this building. So it's a tremendous amount of weight that is concentrated in a very small footprint. That from, you know, I'm a mechanical engineer, not a civil engineer, but it's strictly the engineering side that you need the support for that large of a structure.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Ms. Jeffcoat-Seiko, please.
Finally got the green light to come on. Good morning.
Good morning.
What is the projected completion date?
The reason I hesitate is there's a number of different answers for that. The projected commercial operation date is the October 1st, 2015. The unit will be in service for testing and tuning long before that. So we expect the equipment to be operating by the 1st of July. We expect the testing tuning to be completed, and it's strictly an operating unit, no construction, by October 1st, 2015.
So that meets your EPA deadline?
Yes.
Okay, and so that one, Jerry and I were just looking at that one slide with the labor needs, which goes out to like 2017 or something, but that's just your ongoing labor needs as you operate it.
Well, that's a small amount. Well, the cash flow goes out to 2017. The labor shouldn't go that, and the cash flow goes out that far basically because of the retention, the money that we're keeping as a club, so to speak, on our vendors. We keep some of that funds for 2 years beyond when the equipment goes into service. So the cash flow goes out 2 years. The labor shouldn't go out that far.
Okay, I apologize. No, I misread that. I don't want to go into a long repeat of the previous case, but I would like a simple statement, if possible, on this record of what your alternatives were to this particular technology.
Now, are you referring to, in the ADP, we looked at options of natural gas and such, or of the technology for the control of SO2?
The control of SO2.
That's probably better left for Mr. Toma to answer. I can, but
okay.
he's more.
My next question was going to be, why'd you pick this one? Yeah. Okay. Thank you. One question that still may be for you. Does this installation affect your ability to burn alternate fuels?
Big Stone is not burning alternate fuels now.
And it would prohibit you then in the future from going back to burning alternate fuels?
This, to the best of my knowledge, would not have any effect on whether the unit burns alternative fuel or not.
Okay, so why is it not burning any? I didn't know that, but just tell me, what is the decision basis for whether you do or don't burn the alternative fuels?
Yeah, I'll defer that to Mr. Toma.
That's all I have. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Jeffcoat-Seiko. Commissioner Fedorchuk, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Rolfes.
Good morning.
It's unusual to see prices come in this far under projections in any kind of a large project. And so to that, I applaud you. It's great to see, and the consumers will be paying for it really ultimately benefit from that. Can you tell me how confident are you in those projections staying true? You outlined a number of risk factors, labor, and a few other things that could affect the ultimate cost of this project. How comfortable are you that those projections are going to stay true?
Well, in my role of project manager, there really is only one answer. I'm extremely confident that in these numbers. And the reason I say that, I don't want to sound flippant, but 99% of the procurements are behind us and locked in. So the only real exposure is going to be on the construction side, and we've got a very good contractor and a very good contract to protect us. And we still have some contingency dollars in there for the unexpected. And there's always unexpected. I mean, you dig to put a water line in and find something that was there that wasn't marked, and weather and such. So we still have contingency, though. But a lot of the expenditures are behind us. We've got good contractors and good plans. So I feel very confident that we'll deliver for that price or possibly even under.
Excellent. You talked a little bit with Mr. Norrell of the reasons why Otter Tail is serving as general contractor was the right choice. Are there some risks to that as well?
There's always risk with any decision. I think the risks are pretty minimal. I mean, the key is that we have the resources to respond to the problems as they arise, and we think we have that. There could always be some situation that we didn't anticipate, and we don't have the expertise on staff to handle that. But in the process, we've developed a number of relations with engineering firms and firms that provide technical assistance that we could probably get the right talent in a short period of time.
And I think you included in your testimony, but I can't recall exactly, how much did you save? How much do you estimate you saved by serving as a general contractor? What is it, one of the big categories?
They were listed in the order, and this was the third, I believe.
Okay.
No. Rather than from memory, I know I thought it was approximately 13% of the savings.
Mr. Robbins is on page 10, I think.
Okay. 13%.
Okay. With this investment, what's the lifespan for Big Stone?
Any plant life really depends on how it's maintained and how it's treated and what happens for new environmental regulations and such. But the plant should very easily be able to run another 30 years with this addition to it.
Okay. And then I don't know if you or Mr. Toma would be the one to answer this, but this reflects back on the previous case a bit, but having not been here, I'm hoping to get this information kind of in a nutshell. What was the price difference, or was there an estimated price difference determined between the SCR and the SNCR?
There was never a high-level accuracy number determined because the South Dakota rule just said SCR was the only option, so we did not expend the engineering effort to get a price as detailed as what the SCR price is. An engineering guess would be that it's probably $75, $80 million, but that's not a true calculated number.
Okay. So with the reduction in cost to this, does the company feel that they were similar in price?
No, because not all of this reduction came from the SCR.
Okay.
Some of it came. More, the majority of it actually came on the SCR side, but not all of it.
Okay. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Cog, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mark, for your testimony. And to jump around a little bit, or like Ms. Jeffcoat, if we have to defer to a different witness, just let me know, of course. When Otter Tail and MDU were in front of the commission for the ADP, Otter Tail recommended the SNCR. There must have been some analysis done why you recommended that.
I think I will defer. Mr. Toma can probably better answer that.
Okay, so that's a question coming there. So, but you're the project manager, though. So you weren't consulted in that at all?
The decision, the modeling and such was done long before there was a project. So, no, I really wasn't. I know from my experience, to me it makes sense. I mean, and Mr. Thomas' testimony compares what other cyclone units are doing and such. And to me, from my opinion, the SCR was the proper thing to do.
Okay. Do you have any background of how much Otter Tail and MDU weighed in the South Dakota proceedings to determine the standard that was set?
Again, Mr. Toma can give you a much more detailed answer, but I know we were involved through the 2 years of the modeling process trying to work to get the most accurate representation of what the unit's effect on disability was. So there was a lot of effort for a number of years to make sure the outcome was reasonable and proper.
Okay, thank you. You testified on your PowerPoint about the risk management matrix. Would that be any different if you use the SNCR technology vice the one selected?
No. I mean, this is to try and look at everything from labor to weather to contracting methodology and such. We'd have to, the same factors would still be on the matrix.
Okay. And then I believe that's it. I just, please don't take my criticism of the differences in technology to the work that's been done on this project, because I would say that right up front, for the technology you selected, the fact that you've got the cost down is greatly appreciated. So thank you. That was all that I had, Your Honor.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Crispin, please.
Your Honor, I think I only have one question, and maybe it's for the wrong witness. I'm not sure, so you can just defer it if it is. But with the moving target that is the EPA, do you get some kind of a long-term agreement with them when you embark on a $400 million project like this? Or do you lay awake at night wondering if next year you're going to have a big chunk of this money expended and find out that the rules changed and this is useless? Or how does that work?
That type of negotiation with the EPA, and Mr. Toma can probably better answer that. I mean, it doesn't work that way, at least not for us. They didn't say you do this and we'll keep our hands off of you for 20 years or anything like that. This takes care of our obligations under regional haze, so we're in very good shape for that, especially with the technology we're putting on the unit. To me, the common sense answer is you look at what other coal plants are doing and what we're putting on Big Stone. We're one of the last, not the first. So there's nothing in the record. There's no law, but it's the type of thing that if you're the only one that hasn't, sooner or later there will be something that will force you. So, I mean, that to me is what allows me to sleep at night, is because what we're meeting the de facto standard of the industry.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Connor, I didn't have a follow-up based on that.
Commissioner Kalk, please.
I'll let Commissioner Fedorchuk first.
Since you mentioned being one of the last, not one of the first, talk a little bit more about that and why these investments haven't been made sooner and why other facilities have done that beyond just the haze issue.
Well, again, Mr. Toma has a exhibit that addresses this directly, but just very high level, we defer these because of the cost to our customers. Mm-hmm. That's why we're one of the last, is because we didn't volunteer to do things before it was needed. It keeps the rates lower for our customers.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mark. My understanding was if Big Stone 2 had been completed, these would have been included, or a vast majority of these would have been included in the Big Stone 2. Is that wrong?
The SO2 portion would have been, but not the NOx portion.
Okay.
Big Stone 2 would have taken care of the scrubber baghouse, but Big Stone 2 did not address the NOx emissions for Big Stone 1.
So what percentage of costs then would have been addressed had Big Stone 2 been completed?
Again, I don't have – this is an engineering guess.
Sure.
We'd be sitting with probably half to two-thirds of the cost would have already been taken care of by Big Stone 2.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, commissioners? Thank you. Mr. Gerhardsen, any further questions of this witness, Mr. Rolfes?
No questions.
No questions. Mr. Kuntz?
No.
Mr. Norell?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffco-Sacco?
Nothing, thanks.
No? All right. Thank you, Mr. Rolfes. Mr. Gerhardsen, please.
Okay. Call Mr. Mark Toma.
Mr. Toma, you heard the admonition I gave in regard to perjury, correct?
I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Gerritsen, please.
Can you state your name and spell your last name for the record, and then maybe also tell us what you do and describe that your activities in your job?
Certainly. Mark Toma. Last name is spelled T-H-O-M-A. I'm the manager of environmental services for Otter Tail Power Company. My responsibilities include permitting and compliance in the areas of air quality, solid waste, and water quality for the company, including those responsibilities for Big Stone Plant.
Mr. Toma, I've left at the podium there what's been marked for identification as OTP-6. Is that your direct testimony pre-filed in this case?
It is.
Do you have any corrections that you would make to that, or like to make to that pre-filed direct testimony?
I do. I have two minor corrections I would like to make to my exhibit that is marked MT-2.
And maybe for the record, I can clarify that the exhibit is marked for identification as OTP-6, but the exhibit OTP-6 has two exhibits at the end of the question and answer testimony. I'm sorry, three exhibits numbered MT-1, MT-2, and MT-3. And so which, again, were you referring to?
MT2. Thank you.
Can you describe the corrections you'd like to make?
Yes. First of all, on page 2, referencing cell A13, that says Alan S. King. That has a footnote of 5. That footnote should be numbered 7 and not 5. And then moving to my next correction, actually correct.
I may want to note that I think the copies. My copy has a 7 there. I'm sorry. So this is under A. I'm sorry. The 5 is in the 13A. I'm sorry. So the 5 should be a 7 in that cell.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And then moving to a correction that applies to both pages 3 and 4, the very top row, I managed to skip the letter D, obviously. So instead of going A, B, C, E, F, G, it should be D, E, and F. And again, that applies to both pages 3 and 4 of that MT-2.
Everyone get those changes? Again, you were looking both times at MT-2, right?
Correct.
Which is the attachment to the testimony.
Correct.
Do you have any other corrections to your testimony, Mr. Toma?
I do not.
I'm just going to ask that you speak up just a little bit. I think maybe the air system in the building is making it a little bit hard for me to hear. If I asked you each of the questions in the question and answer portion of your testimony, if I asked you those today, would the answers that you gave in your pre-filed direct testimony be the same?
Yes.
I'll offer OTP-6.
There's no objection. I'll admit OTP-6. And again, as with the previous two exhibits, this is an exhibit for both companies. Mr. Gerritsen, please.
Mr. Toma, would you just briefly summarize the topics that you covered in your testimony?
My testimony describes briefly the regional haze regulation that required Big Stone Plant to undergo an evaluation of best available retrofit technology, or BART. It also summarizes the steps that the South Dakota Department of Environment and Natural Resources followed to determine what constitutes BART for Big Stone Plant.
the characteristics of the plant that factored into the determination and specifics as to why SCR is required to reduce NOx. And finally, my testimony attempts to put the SCR determination into perspective compared to other area plants and also similar plants throughout the United States.
I'll tender Mr. Toma for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gerritsen. Any questions by you, Mr. Kuntz?
No, Your Honor. Oh,
thank you. Mr. Norrell, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Mr. Toma. I notice on page 1, line 10 of your testimony, you stated that you graduated in 2001 from University of North Dakota. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So there would have been a national championship hockey team during this time. Is that correct?
That is correct. I witnessed two.
Very good. On moving on to page 2 of your testimony, we discussed the haze obligations, the haze rule, and you noted two Class 1 areas, which included Theodore Roosevelt National Park and Lostwood National Wildlife Refuge in North Dakota. As I understand it, both of those are on the western side of North Dakota, but Big Stone's on the eastern part of North Dakota. How do these Class 1 areas in western North Dakota, how are they affected by haze generated by something on complete opposite side of the state?
Good question. It all comes down to the modeling effort, and part of the modeling is what direction is the wind blowing. It is not always a consistent direction, and so in the model, it factors in all the meteorological characteristics over the period of time that goes into the model. So during those times where it would have shown an impact from Big Stone plant on Theodore National Roosevelt or Lostwood, it would have been primarily due to the wind direction at that time.
This kind of dovetails with the question that Commissioner Christman had asked earlier of the previous witness, but later on in page 2 you discuss some There's a rule, a goal of no man-made, this is line 21-22, a goal of no man-made visibility impairment in Class 1 areas by 2064. My question is there any sort of, do you know that that's not going to change? Is that going to be increased? Is it going to be pushed back? Will there be other, what other things are you facing between now and 2064? That's a long ways away.
So maybe just for some perspective, the Clean Air Act amendments of 1977 is when Congress set this goal to prevent and remedy impairment in Class 1 areas. And fast forwarding to the 1999 Regional Haze Rule, where EPA began to enforce that congressional goal of the Clean Air Act, they had to determine what's the time frame that this should be achieved. Again, it is required from the Clean Air Act. And so they came to the determination that it should be over a 60-year period beginning with the year 2004. So that's kind of how that came into play. In order to change that date, either the Regional Haze Rule or the Clean Air Act would have to be amended.
On page 6 of your testimony, line 2, you state that, as specified by the Clean Air Act, states are responsible for determining the BART. So is it fair to say that there's no uniform BART across the country, or these vary from state to state?
That would be fair.
What happens when you've got neighboring bordering states that have different determinations of what is BART?
States are required to consult during the development of their regional haze state implementation plan, recognizing that emissions from other states can impact their state. Specific to the BART, that is a state determination that is specific. So in this case, the South Dakota Department of Environmental and Natural Resources was responsible ultimately for determining BART still had to be approved by the Environmental Protection Agency. Had they not approved of the state decision, they would have had an obligation to promulgate a federal implementation plan.
Is South Dakota's BART on these type projects the same as North Dakota's, do you know?
Big Stone Plant is the only BART-eligible electric generating unit of that size in the states. So there is no direct comparison to North Dakota, simply because Big Stone Plant burns sub-bituminous coal, and is a cyclone boiler, whereas the cyclone boilers in North Dakota all burn lignite fuel.
On page 13 of your testimony, regarding your exhibit MT2, you state that Big Stone Plant, the cost effectiveness, this is line 2 through 4, cost effectiveness of installing SCR at Big Stone Plant is within the range, and in many cases less than the cost of effectiveness of other area NOx BART determinations, but it's not the cheapest, is that correct?
That is correct.
What are the reasons why it's more expensive?
It would come down to plant-specific factors as well as the ultimate technologies. Big Stone Plant, specific to the NOx, installing the SCR would be comparatively more expensive than those other units that you possibly are referencing that show up cheaper. One that comes immediately to mind would be, I believe, the determination for the Sherco plant in Minnesota. That plant, I believe, was simply installing an overfire air with some advanced controls as part of their BART. Although I should add, still being challenged specific to that site.
Moving on to page 14 and 15, talk about the deciview levels. And by my reading of this would be the difference is going, this is not a perceptible change in difference to the naked eye. Is that correct?
As referred to selecting SCR over SNCR, that is correct. And going off of EPA's threshold of a half a deciview being perceptible.
What other alternatives to this project besides SCR, SNCR, were there any other alternatives? Why was this one chosen in particular?
There's a multitude of steps in determining what is BART. When it came down to the NOx technology, first of all, you list what technologies are feasible, eliminate any that I guess would be infeasible, and then determine do they resolve the visibility impairment. And it was determined for NOx at Big Stone Plant that SCR, SNCR, and a technology called rich reagent injection met those goals. That's not the only factor that has to be considered when determining BART. You also have to determine the control effectiveness, the cost effectiveness, remaining useful life of the source in coming to that conclusion. And based on the fact, looking at the cost effectiveness combined with there is an incremental improvement in the visibility, SCR over the other technologies, that was ultimately selected.
Would SNCR have a shorter life expectancy? I think you mentioned that was one of the determining factors as well.
It would not. It's somewhat speculative depending on what other regulations come down the pipeline. We all know that it is a ever-changing world. and environmental regulations. So had SNCR been the right choice, it wouldn't necessarily mean that it would have been the final choice forever at Big Stone Plant.
I have no further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Norrell. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle, please.
Well, Ryan actually asked all my questions except for one, and that is, does the decision limit future fuel at Big Stone to sub-bituminous?
Based on the technology today, we don't believe that lignite would be feasible to burn at Big Stone Plant. Based on the SCR, obviously, if you're talking about gas conversions or different types of coal, there's different types of coal in the United States, eastern bituminous fuels, but that's not a realistic option.
So you're basically, okay, I realize for transportation and that sort of thing, but rather than saying limit to sub-bituminous, should I have worded it exclude lignite?
As it stands today, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle. Commissioner Fedorchak, please.
Thank you. Mr. Toma, in this, in proceedings like this, we talk a lot about the technical issues, and I am always trying to find ways to translate this stuff to the people who we are elected to serve. And so I'm going to back way up. So tell me, what is in haze? What's haze, and what are the components of it?
Regional haze is, it's a visibility impairment primarily caused by fine particulates, which either are directly emitted or formed in the atmosphere through other components, such as SO2 and NOx are considered precursors to regional haze.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why SO2, NOx, and particulate are the subject typically of BART determinations in the regional haze rule.
Is mercury part of that, or that's separate?
That is separate.
Okay, so leave mercury out for a minute. Besides causing visibility issues, are there other health concerns with SO2 and NOx in its relation to haze, what we call haze?
The intent of the section of the Clean Air Act is purely for visibility improvement. However, EPA is quick to note that reducing those fine particulates, SO2 and NOx, there is a corresponding health benefit, but it's not, it should not be the driver for determining BART.
Okay. So the driver of this is the haze and the visibility, but there are other health benefits.
Yes.
That would be accurate to say that, of this project.
Yes.
Okay. Now tell me about the mercury. If you weren't forced through haze to deal with the mercury, why is that included in this?
So we're also dealing with the mercury and air toxic standards, or MATS rule.
Mm-hmm.
This is a rule that it was published in the Federal Register as a final rule in February of 2012. And the compliance date for that rule, standard compliance date for that rule, would be April of 2015. And that rule regulates mercury. It also includes a requirement to either control sulfur dioxide or hydrogen chloride. And it also includes a requirement to meet a particulate matter standard. There are synergies with the Regional Haze Project because we will be reducing sulfur dioxide at Big Stone Plant, so we will comply with that standard. We'll be pairing activated carbon injection with the equipment to comply with the mercury standard, and we currently already meet the particulate matter standard, and we will continue to meet that standard. I should note that the April 2015 compliance date for MATS, we recently received an extension to comply with that rule from the South Dakota Department of Environment and Natural Resources, And so we can comply with that rule coincident with this regional haze rule project underway at Big Stone.
Okay. I know I read in a news release when you broke ground on this project, I think it was Mr. McFarland's comments, summarizing the overall environmental benefits of this project. Can you restate those? Just kind of in summary, all of them combined. How do you describe them?
Certainly. It's always dangerous when you start talking numbers and percentages, so please take these generally.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, we're looking at 80 to 90% reductions in SO2, NOx, and mercury.
Okay. So changing direction a little bit. Thank you for that education. Why did Otter Tail recommend SNCR if SCR is the technology that works with subituminous on a boiler of this nature?
When we made the recommendation, we had not received any firm guidance from the South Dakota DENR as to how they would select BART. We simply follow the path of did it resolve the visibility impairment and selected the least expensive option. Now, that final decision is ultimately up to the DENR of South Dakota. And again, as I believe I stated in my testimony, they considered all the factors which is required under the BART guidelines from EPA.
Okay. You mentioned, or I asked the previous witness this question. I'm going to ask you, too, because you might be able to provide a more pointed answer. With the reductions in cost of the this project, in your opinion, is it close to how much the SNCR project would have costed? And if not, what would be approximate difference percentage-wise?
It's not directly relatable. I believe it was noted in the ADP record that the initial estimated difference between the SCR and SNCR technologies was approximately $70 million. If you compare it to the budget decrease, that seems to line up, but the budget decrease was not all related to the SCR, as Mr. Rolfe has explained. So I don't believe those numbers are relatable necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think you mentioned this to Mr. Norrell, but I'm going to ask you to restate it too. What would we be losing under the SNCR in terms of environmental benefits? So in other words, if I were saying to a customer, yes, it's costing you more, but here's what you're getting in return. Describe that to me.
I believe the difference, obviously there's a difference in the amount of NOx that will be controlled. And in our BART analysis, the SCR, I believe, percent control was around 50%. Please, again, take that generally versus the much higher control that you'll see from an SCR. From the visibility perspective, there is, again, on paper, a difference between the two, but as acknowledged, using the pure threshold from EPA of a half a deciview being perceptible, it's not a half a deciview difference. Again, that's not the determining factor in selecting BART, but there are differences, obviously, in the control and in the technologies.
Anything else?
Not at this time.
Okay. Okay. I think that's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mark, for your testimony. Last week, the commission was up in Williston and talking about a power line. And I'm always amazed at the witnesses we get, how smart they are and how educated they are and how much they bring to the table. So I appreciate your background in chemistry and Mr. Norell's comments as well. I got a bunch of things here to kind of walk through, and once again, please point me somewhere else if not appropriate. When Otter Tail initially recommended the SNCR, who made the decision inside of Otter Tail to not pursue that, to basically just say, hey, whatever the state says, we're going to do?
So after we made the recommendation to the state of South Dakota, we supplied an abundance of information to the state, modeling results, our rough estimates of cost of technologies, and we made the recommendation when we sent them all that information. They took all that, they considered it, they went through the required BART guidelines, and then ultimately determined that SCR should be selected for BART.
If there, just to interrupt before I lose my thought, is there somewhere where we could take notice of or reach out to of what Otter Tail did to educate South Dakota on why SNCR was the best choice?
It would have been included in our BART analysis. I know that was included as part of the record in the ADP that was performed by Burns and McDonald Engineering. And that would have included the cost differences and any other differences between the two technologies.
When was the decision made? Because I look back through the ADP order, the decision being to go with SCR. When was that decision actually made by Otter Tail? Because I can't really glean that inside the ADP order.
Could you clarify when Otter Tail made the decision to support SCR or to recommend the SNCR?
When Otter Tail made the decision to support SCR and continue with that as your alternative, if you will. Well, you know what? I assume it was in 2012 sometime, but what?
Predates that. We were notified, I believe it was early 2010, as to their proposed findings. And certainly we carefully considered how they came to that decision. And, you know, I was not manager at the time, but I was aware and involved in the conversations that we ultimately decided to send a letter of support. We noted we were somewhat disappointed and that it was a higher cost technology, but we did support that finding after careful consideration.
You said generally 2010?
Yes.
Okay. You talked a little bit about how the Theodore Roosevelt Park in western North Dakota would be included in a model that it may benefit by SCR. Explain to me again how that benefits the park.
It benefits, again, from a modeled visibility impairment on certain days. You know,
okay.
Not every day of the year.
So there are some days, in your opinion, that the human eye can detect the difference?
I would have to couch that by saying that according to the model results and the half a decibel threshold set by EPA as the perceptible impact, that based on Big Stone Plant's baseline emissions, it was modeled on a certain percentage of the time to show that impact that is perceptible.
Okay.
Sorry for talking around that.
No, that's fine. How does your model include the coal plant in Estevan, Canada, that emissions are much different than U.S. emissions?
The modeling was specific to the plant. It does not model specific other individual plants as well. It is Big Stone's contribution.
Does it include models of other coal plants in the region at all?
It did not. It includes, again, just those characteristics specific to Big Stone Plant. It includes the area's meteorological conditions. But, again, the test is what is Big Stone's contribution, not how it's viewed in comparison to other regional plants' contributions.
So models only being as good as what you can actually test in the ground, there could be what the model predicts has no impact to Theodore Roosevelt National Park because of other coal-fired plants in Canada.
I believe the best I could answer that is the Big Stones plant contribution was determined to be perceptible.
Fair enough. We'll move on.
Sorry.
When you talked with Commissioner Fedorchuk about some of the health differences, it was an excellent line of discussion. But my understanding is I would agree with you on the health for the SOX, if you will. The acid rain comes out of that. I think that's documented. Your mercury, I would agree with that. But I'm not sure that I agree with the NOx as being a documented health standard. My understanding of the no adverse effects on humans, NOx is hard to prove one way or the other. And I'm not a chemist like you are.
Sure. NOx is regulated. Again, it is considered a precursor to forming fine particulates in the atmosphere.
But it is not regulated itself.
And it all correct. And it there is an ambient air quality standard specific to nitrogen dioxide, which EPA sets those health standards for.
Would both of the technologies have met that standard of NOx? Those two being SNCR and SCR?
As of today, yes. I mean, this technology was not selected to comply with the current ambient standards, you know, recognizing that they're constantly under revision by EPA, and I don't want to speculate what the future would hold. Obviously, NOx is also regulated because it forms ozone. And so you have particulate matter ambient air quality standards, ozone ambient air quality standards, and nitrogen dioxide ambient air quality standards.
So could you quantify the extra value of what you may get in NOx protection in the future by picking SCR?
It would require me to have a crystal ball that I don't have.
So you have no idea how quickly it would move?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see here. I think that's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Christman, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mark, when the modeling is being done and on the impacts of a national park, like in this case, Theodore Roosevelt National Park, is it all based on the impact to the air right in the park, or is it a certain boundary? Do they check the impact for a certain area outside of the park, or what's the lines?
It is the border of the Class 1 area itself. So it's inside the park.
The Class 1 area, yes. Border is the same as the park border. So it doesn't matter,
yes,
what's a mile away. It's what's inside the border.
Yes. That is my understanding.
And is it only on the national parks, or is it on federal land? Like, does the national grasslands up there or
it is
anything
only
else have the same or receive the same concern?
There's 156 of these Class 1 areas. The grasslands are not counted in those. So in the immediate area, you have Theodore Nashville, Lostwood, South Dakota, you have Badlands, Wind Cave, Minnesota, Boundary Waters, and Voyageurs. So those are the examples of the Class 1 areas. And again, there's 156 of these throughout the United States.
Okay. And then kind of switching topics, but I always feel when I try and understand what we're doing here that we're arguing in sort of a backwards way, and that North Dakota, with lignite production, ought to be arguing in favor of the more expensive alternative in case they ever want to switch fuel sources. And one would think that since one of the big differences are higher sodium and ash levels, that it would be lignite where you where it would require the more expensive alternative. So in that North Dakota has the higher sodium and ash levels, why is SNCR the proper technology for North Dakota plants, and the more expensive SCR is the proper technology for a subbituminous coal fuel plant?
There's quite an extensive record in the North Dakota Regional HACCP that discusses it better than I will here. But it comes down to SCR is simply not technically feasible with those sodium and ash characteristics of a lignite plant. The SCR is a catalyst that has essentially all these small pores that the flue gas goes through, and the ash characteristics of lignite are such that it will plug that catalyst and just physically will not work. In order for it to work on lignite, there's theories that you could put it downstream of your particulate matter control equipment where you don't have all that ash. However, at that point, your flue gas temperature is such that you would need to reheat it in order to promote the reaction. And at that point, now it's an extremely costly option. So it really is the characteristics of lignite that prevent SCR from physically working. Whereas SNCR, selective non-catalytic reduction, does not use that catalyst whatsoever. It simply injects ammonia into a specific temperature region of the boiler to reduce NOx, but you don't get the same level of control with the catalyst. So it really comes down to feasibility.
So that explains why the SCR would not work on lignite.
Correct.
But would there be any reason that we would want it to work on lignite since it's more expensive?
The reason we would want it to work on lignite is due to the fact that we know if it's feasible, you can achieve the greatest level of NOx reduction. So depending what standards you may surmise are any number of years from now, in order to get to those very low levels of NOx control, SCR, as of today, would be required.
And the SCR would not work with lignite because it just wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. But SNCR would work with subbituminous, just not quite as well.
Correct.
Is that fair?
I think it's fair to characterize that SNCR would work similarly for both lignite and subbituminous.
So really what we're down to is a difference between, and I know it was an early estimate, but somewhere around maybe $70 million for a little bit better emissions control, but at a cost of whatever that amount is, somewhere around $70 million, and excluding any potential for lignite ever being used in that plant with this technology.
Correct. That.
Okay.
I can expound on that if you would like. You know, looking at the cost effectiveness was not the issue at stake in North Dakota in developing their state implementation plan. It was more so the actual feasibility of the technology. This was not South Dakota coming up with their own state law or state plan. It was required by EPA's regional haze plan to promulgate this SIP. Had they not, EPA was obligated to promulgate a federal implementation plan. Looking at, again, the world in which we live in, if you were to compare similar boilers to Big Stone Plant throughout the United States, and when I say similar, similar in boiler type cyclone, similar in fuel type PRB, and similar in size, you would find that Big Stone Plant is on the back end of installing this technology. And it's, I believe, shown in my one of my exhibits, MT-3. By the time this SCR is operational at Big Stone Plant, there would be no similar boilers to Big Stone Plant. Again, cyclone PRB size that just have an SNCR installed.
Okay, and then my last question is, when this is in and operational, will there be significant operational costs that are much different between having done the SCR as opposed to had SNCR been built?
There are different operational costs. They were evaluated, again, as part of the BART determination. The catalyst, obviously, is the big adder that has to be replaced or rejuvenated every so many thousand hours. So there are additional operating costs with an SCR as compared to an SNCR. Those were represented in the cost effectiveness calculations that were included in the BART analysis.
I guess then, Your Honor, I do need one more question. What is the difference? Do you have a dollar amount per year or something like that that is a rule of thumb?
I would have to refer back to the BART analysis. I don't have that at the tip of my tongue. I apologize.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchak.
A couple of additional questions. When the company sort of supported, I'm not sure, it sounds to me like you didn't maybe have a whole lot of choice whether you were going to support it or not, but when you agreed to kind of send a letter of support for the SCR, did you factor into that decision any additional and future environmental regulations that you might be protecting yourself from or positioning yourself to address, and did you quantify that in any way, or could you?
We didn't have anything directly quantifiable, but it was certainly forefront in our minds. You know, there are lots of rules spinning out there. There's the Clean Air Interstate Rule, which affects the eastern part of the United States, which is proposed to be replaced by the Cross-State Air Pollution Rule, which is up in the air right now. It's in front of the Supreme Court. That affects Minnesota. Big Stone Plant is obviously very close to Minnesota. So you think about how close we are to possibly some additional regulations. We knew the MATS standard at the time. We didn't know what the limits would be, but we knew they were spinning. Again, this will resolve the SO2 standard in the MATS rule. So certainly there's not a single one we could point to and say this exact technology will be required for this other rule as well. But we knew that there were several spinning at the time.
So if you were to characterize it, would you say the SCR provides slightly better positioning over the SNCR, or significantly, or somewhere in between?
That's difficult. It provides, I would say, significantly better NOx control. Okay. So as that pertains to how they develop their rulemakings and what flexibilities there may be, it's difficult to know for sure.
Okay, fair enough. Are other plants that you just described, the similar in nature with the cyclone boilers and the subituminous coal use, they had SNCR, are they upgrading to the SCR as a result of all of this?
there are a few units, I should say, that were similar to Big Stone that do not currently have an SNCR or an SCR. Those units, as noted in my exhibit, are being planned to be shut down and retired. There are many units that already have SCR installed, and there are a handful of units that have this rich reagent injection technology, which was evaluated for Big Stone plant, but basically had the same cost effectiveness and achieved far fewer reductions. So it was clearly not the right option. So if you just had an SNCR installed, again, there will be no plant that has one in this time frame that we're installing SCR.
Okay. Then you mentioned that this will be the last plant to have this technology installed. Can you sort of bring me up to speed a bit on when this technology became generally used, and how long have other coal-fired plants been using this?
I'll have to admit I'm not well positioned to answer that question. I do know generally that it's been installed and operating in some facilities for a decade.
Okay.
Alan King in Minnesota installed it in the 2007 time frame.
Okay.
It would be the nearest cyclone-fired PRB plant in proximity to Big Stone.
And why did they do that? What was driving it?
Theirs was actually part of a voluntary MERP, Metro Emission Reduction Plan, that their company had. It was not specific to any rulemaking, although I believe they noted that they foresaw the regional haze rule and other rules coming down the pipeline, but it was a voluntary project.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further questions, Commissioners? Commissioner Kalk?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Mark. I remembered where I was going with the Winded Otter Tail Select. It was, I'd look back to your testimony. The EPA final approval for the South Dakota SIP was published in the Federal Register April 26th of 2012. That is correct?
Yes.
Okay. So later in your testimony, you talked about how out in Wyoming, certain groups are appealing the EPA's decision. Was there any discussion of Otter Tail to appeal this, or any understanding of other groups in South Dakota that maybe were appealing this? Because that was one of the things that I think, speaking of the previous commission, was waiting to see what might happen.
There was not. When an EPA rule becomes final, usually there's a 60-day period where you could petition for judicial review. That has passed. We did not give any consideration to that. I'm not aware if there was any other outside groups that were considering challenging that final action.
Okay. And then this question, I should have asked it earlier, but it may not be to you, but it needs to be to somebody in Otter Tail and MDU, is how would you view compliance with air quality standards for a state different than compliance for energy generation in a state? Or do you view them the same?
I don't believe I'm well suited to answer that question. I'll gladly defer
someone
to somebody.
Any idea who that might be?
Perhaps Mr. Brawls.
Okay. Yeah. I looked at your list of witnesses, but I wanted to put it out there now, so thank you.
Any further questions, Commissioners? Thank you. Mr. Gerhardsen, anything further of Mr. Toma?
I do have questions, actually, that I hope to clarify some things.
Sure.
You know, I think it's important to get in the record, and at least, you know, if anyone's listening, what would have happened if Otter Tail had attempted to install an SNCR on Big Stone plant? What if we were constructing an SNCR? What would the consequence be?
We are required to install that technology as expeditiously as practical and no later than 5 years after EPA's final approval. So without the SCR technology, we would not be able to operate Big Stone plant, certainly as coal, beyond April of 2017.
Do you have any sense if that would be if it would be cost effective to discontinue operations at that time? I mean, do you have any, is there prior records?
I believe there's an extensive record of that in the ADP, analyzed, you know, options, more, including retirement and repowerment with natural gas.
Now, I want to go back to a question that Mr. Norell asked you. Now, that's quite a while ago. But he asked you a bit about what should happen in North Dakota based upon a South Dakota decision. And you've had some other questions related to that. And I just want to ask you about whether there is a different standard in North Dakota with respect to what is BART for a cyclone boiler burning subbituminous coal. Is there a standard in North Dakota that is different from what was established by South Dakota?
There's not a different standard. The Department of Health in North Dakota did not have to make that determination because there is not a cyclone fire boiler that burns subbituminous coal in North Dakota. You know, I could speculate what their determination might have been looking at what they had set as a cost effectiveness threshold. But again, they did not make this a dissimilar determination.
You said you could make an assumption. I'm just asking you, do you believe that North Dakota would have has established an SNCR as the standard in North Dakota?
It's speculation. My opinion is that they would not have made a different decision than the state of South Dakota. Again, I believe my testimony mentions the state of North Dakota did set a cost-effectiveness threshold of $3,650 per ton. And for Big Stone Plant, the SCR cost-effectiveness calculation came in under $900 per ton. So it met that threshold. I don't want to put words in the North Dakota Department of Health's would have determined, because they did not have to make it.
I think I just kind of want to try and establish that when Mr. Norell asked you that question, was there, you know, where I'm going is really, is there a different standard? I think the implication of his question might have been that there was. I do think it's important that we turn to your exhibit MT3. You referred to it a few times. I think I've got the right exhibit. Can you, again, just summarize what does MT3, what can you conclude from what you have identified in MT3? How about that?
Again, this exhibit is a compilation of what I consider to be similar units to Big Stone Plant. That is, they are cyclone-fired boilers that primarily fire subbituminous coal. And I took this information out of EPA's databases, and it lists by state those similar boilers, their capacities, whether they are BART eligible, and probably the crux of it is column G, which lists their existing NOx controls that they have in place, either SCR, SNCR, or rich reagent injection. And as you look down that column, you'll see no check marks in the SNCR column. Several, I believe 19 that currently have SCR, a handful that have RRI, and there are a few that have no boxes checked. And as noted in column H, the units with no boxes checked are being shut down, with the exception of Big Stone Plant, which we plan to put SCR, which will align with the other universe of similar boilers in this exhibit.
So let's just, this is such an important point in my opinion that I really want to make sure that everybody understands what it's saying. if we look down that same column G and the column within column G called SCR, there are a few plants that don't have an SCR checked.
Correct.
And if we look to the right, there are some that have RRI selected. Is that correct?
Yes.
Other ones have notes in the comments indicating that they're not going to be operating what would be like the last date of operations of any of those plants.
Yes.
No, what would be the last date? I think we have
the last date of any of those plants would be represented in the very last roll. The Wisconsin Edgewater Unit 4 is under a consent decree to retire or repower by December 31st of 2018. I would note that unit already has RRI installed, and even with that, we'll have to shut down or repower.
Now, I also want to just emphasize, is this a representative sample of the cyclone boilers burning subbituminous coal, or is this every single unit in the country burning subbituminous coal in a cyclone boiler?
It is every boiler, which I consider to be large. There are some small plants out there that are not represented in this, but I believe my footnote clarifies that I simply define large boilers to be greater than 125 megawatts, so it is not every, but I wanted to get as many as possible that are similar to Big Stone Plant.
So going back to if we had wanted Big Stone to operate using just an SNCR, not an SCR, and we wanted to continue operating the plant beyond 2018, we would have had to have been the only plant in the country with that hope. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Let's be clear just again. There are no similar plants in North Dakota, so there are no similar plants represented on this table in the state of North Dakota.
That is correct. And I want to clarify my answer to your previous questions that there will not be any what I consider to be large cyclone-fired PRBMs. Yes.
Understood. Yep.
And in North Dakota, there are not any similar units.
Now let's talk a little bit about some of the disputes that are occurring in other parts of the country. In Wyoming, for example, there was a question about those disputes. Can I ask you to just summarize what you know? I know you did it a bit in your pre-filed direct testimony about what you know about those disputes and how they bear on the question of what Big Stone has for a BART.
Wyoming is a much different case than South Dakota. All of the BART units in Wyoming are pulverized coal boilers. They also burn subbituminous coal, but they are not cyclone-fired boilers. And so the state of Wyoming proposed a state implementation plan for several units that did not include SCR. I should note that their state plan did include an SCR requirement for, I believe it was, 5 pulverized coal units. But in several instances where they did not propose SCR, EPA has proposed a FIP to require that SCR technology. Wyoming, there's lots of nuances. I don't know all of them. My understanding was that after the state proposed their plan, EPA basically proposed approval. They took public comment and now are re-proposing a more stringent federal plan. So added complexities, but it is not in my opinion, any way similar to what happened in South Dakota.
I think that's all I have for now.
Thank you, Mr. Gerhardsen. Mr. Kuntz, you have any follow-up questions with? No. Mr. Norrell?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackle?
This is mostly all over my head. I have a very simple question. We're talking about what North Dakota ratepayers should pay here. So tell me simply why North Dakota ratepayers should pay, why is it reasonable for North Dakota ratepayers to pay more for this particular technology than the alternative technology for an imperceptible difference in NOx reduction?
In my opinion, there is not an alternative. Without installing SCR, we would have to stop operation of the plant. This is a required technology to be installed to satisfy this rule.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions of Mr. Toma? No further questions? Let's take a recess here about 10 minutes.
Easy stuff, huh?